From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fifth day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. We'll hear from Nick Sider, Extension field crops entomologist, about the black cutworm. The first flights have been calculated, and farmers will be on the lookout now for the damage those can do in their cornfields. And then we'll return to a story that first aired in mid-April. I checked again with Gary Schnitke to see if the calculations on corn versus soybean on those open acres still weighed in corn's favor through the 10th day of June. He says yes. Go ahead and run that story, so we'll hear that. And then we'll wrap up our time together by talking about the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. By the way, open weather is coming very, very soon. And that all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $7.97.5. That was up 3.25. December 7, 38.5, 2.25 higher. July beans, $16.47, up 6.5 for the old crop. New crop at $14.91.75. The November up 5.25 cents. Bean meal $1.70 higher. The bean oil down 58 cents, and July wheat up 30 for the soft red at $11.06.5. The hard red July at $11.77, 53.75 cents higher. Live cattle were down $1.05 for the day. The feeders off $1.82.5, and lean hogs up $1.97.5. Gold up $6.90 on the afternoon. Crude oil up 51 cents at $108.33. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I assume you're out of the field today. How far along did you get before you had to stop planting?
You know, we were actually really fortunate as far as the weather was concerned. Some of the bigger storms kind of went around us, and so we actually got done with corn planting. And then as far as beans were concerned, you know, we ended up doing everything other than river bottoms. So we got along really well. Everything went in the ground pretty good for the most part. Didn't really have any wet, you know, muddy areas or anything like that that we're real concerned with. So just a matter of how much rain are we going to get out of these systems. And some of our corn's starting to come up, but we, by all means, we've still got quite a bit of it to go yet.
Yeah, so we'll be concerned now will be the heat that comes through and weather, and not so much for corn, but maybe for soybeans, whether you'll have to think about them trying to break through a crusty top, I suppose.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You could have, you could bake the ground just a little bit if you're going to go from these cooler, overcast days, which quite frankly have been good for not worrying about the ground getting hard, to baking it, you know, with 85, 90 degree temperatures. So definitely people are going to really want to see the heat. It's just a matter of is this stuff going to be able to make it up before the ground gets too hard.
The place we've seen the heat today in Chicago is in the wheat pit. I'm wondering what happened there and how you feel about the market for the week.
Yeah, I think whenever it comes down to wheat, people have been kind of trying to figure out, hey, what are we going to see as far as you know, the weather's concerned. We've definitely gotten some rain out there. It's certainly been a, you know, a huge boon for those guys. I think they feel a heck of a lot better, you know, versus where they were at, oh, I don't know, just even a week ago. But whenever it gets right down to it, you also gotta tip your hat as far as wheat's concerned. There's no question that there's a lot of question worldwide. You look at India, you know, the question mark is how small is that crop going to be? You know, they say that, hey, you know what, we're not going to curb our exports, but at the same time, you've got to think that they're going to have to do something there. And so, you know, exports weren't anything to be too excited about here today, but I've got to think the story out of India right now, that might be one of the bigger ones, especially with all the issues we've got coming out of the Black Sea region.
Speaking of which, crude oil over $110 a barrel today. The Dow is down 1,000 points. The outside markets are playing hard ball at this point. Will it impact the marketplace for grains and oilseeds?
I'll tell you, Todd, that's a big question. You look at this dollar, for instance, and you know, you're up here pushing 104 as you and I speak, and there's no doubt that in the past, a surging dollar typically wasn't something where you'd saw commodities rally lock in step, and that's pretty much what's happened over the last few weeks. And so, you wonder, is that going to be the case moving forward? Because that's a pretty tough row to hoe to think that that might actually be the case. But at the same time, you don't really know what's going to happen with inflation. There's no question that inflation has been a huge issue. If you go ahead and continue to raise interest rates and you don't curb inflation, I think that all of a sudden you put yourself in a situation that most of us don't want to see, where to really get inflation under control at some point, you're really going to have to raise interest rates. So, you know, I'm a little concerned moving forward, the path that we're going. I'm not so sure that half point hikes every single month is going to be the right answer, but those guys are a lot smarter than I am.
New crop for both corn and soybeans. Now that producers are looking at an open week, they'll know they get some of the crop in the ground, more of the crop than they have. I'm wondering if this is a place, given the price of both corn and soybeans, that they might, if they haven't already, consider making some catch-up sales.
You know, 737 and 1491, those two prices, I mean, you know, 737 for corn, hedging it, that, how many times have we had the chance to do that? And on a hedging basis, we just haven't had that opportunity before. You know, and so we've been saying all along, we want to kind of get, whether we're either hedged with some sales or whether we've got floors underneath us, to get at least 30% of our crop protected in some fashion, basus REPH. So something that's a fairly conservative estimate as far as bushels are concerned on percentages. Whenever I get out to soybeans, though, pushing $15, you know, especially whenever the spring has manifested itself the way that it has, I've got a tough time believing that bean acres are going to get any smaller. I do think that there was a lot of producers that would have preferred to put more corn in the ground this spring whenever corn raced higher, even after the insurance price was set at $5.90. But you've got to also understand that if you get later on in the spring and you're still looking over at $15 beans, it's pretty tough to convince that producer to put your anhydrous on, wait for a while, and put the corn in the ground whenever you're already, here in the first week of May. So I'm more of a willing seller or protector of bean prices. That doesn't mean I'm bearish. I just think $15 or in that vicinity is a heck of a place to get some sales on.
Next week, USDA will release its first look at the new crop year for 2022-23, the crop that's being put in the ground. What are your expectations?
You know, we kind of feel like this, as far as next week's concerned. Of course, you've got to ask yourself, what's the old crop carryout going to be, first of all? Because you got to carry that into the balance sheet. But right now, you know, we're looking at a situation where we feel like corn's going to get a little tighter on old crop. Beans are going to probably get a fair amount tighter, especially considering we've already, exported the beans that the USDA has said. They're going to have to increase that and probably lower carryout. So as far as new crops concerned, you know, we know what acreage they're going to use, and that's going to come directly from planting intentions. I've got to think that your new crop carryouts, if you're anything above, maybe a 1.4, 1.45, I'd be a little bit surprised, quite frankly. I do think they're going to come out with a big yield, 180, 181. But we got to remember, last year, 177 was actually an all-time national record for corn. So we're certainly not getting started out in the fashion that would translate to another record yield 2 years in a row, which is not a common thing to see. So as far as the soybean situation, I've got to think that you're going to be awfully snug this year. That's going to, of course, carry into next year. But I think 91 million acres, when you plug it in, even with the demand figures we're looking at, I'm still looking at probably a 350 carry.
One last item. What do we know from your perspective about the second or Safrina corn in Brazil?
You know, the Safrina corn has certainly taken a hit. Extremely dry conditions, in parts of the areas that plant Safrina corn. But how much have we been hit? You know, a lot of folks came out earlier at a 118, 120 crop. A lot of folks are kind of nestled in now, maybe at a sub 110, 105 to 110. And that's for overall production. And so I've got to think this Safrina crop's been hurt a fair amount due to how warm and dry. The dry season is certainly onset a lot quicker due to La Nina hanging on. That's something we need to very closely monitor as we move forward, not just because of Brazil, but what's La Nina going to do potentially for the U.S. producer this year, because it's certainly wreaked havoc over the last 18 months.
Hey, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Well, entomologists here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois are always paying special attention to the field crops' insect pest and monitoring flights of things like the black cutworm, which, by the way, those first flights have landed, and we'll be talking about those now with Nick Sider, Extension Entomologist for Field Crops. Thanks, Nick, for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about why the black cutworm is important to farmers?
Black cutworm is one of several migratory pests that we deal with early in the season in Illinois. So the moths are going to be attracted actually to winter annuals, where they will lay their eggs, and that's what the larvae will begin to develop on. Well, when those winter annuals are killed with a burn-down herbicide application, those larvae need somewhere to go, and very often they will then move over to corn, for instance, or soybean in some cases, and that's where they can cause some economic damage.
And what sort of damage does black cutworm do?
Now, when the larvae are small, their feeding on corn and other plants is superficial. It doesn't really result in any economic damage. You'll see a little bit of chewing, a little bit of shot holing in those plants. However, once they reach the fourth instar, which is when they're about a half an inch long, they become large enough that they'll actually feed at the soil line, at the base of the plant, and they'll cut that plant off, and that can cause stand loss. And of course, if you have enough of that stand loss, that can have an impact on yield.
How should producers and others scout for the black cutworm?
Scouting for these can be a challenge. One, they're quite small early on in their development, and two, they're nocturnal, and during the day they'll actually burrow down into the top layer of the residue or perhaps hide in the whorls of the plants. So scouting for black cutworm is a two-step process. One, if you use pheromone traps for the adult moths, you can actually track when you have a significant moth flight going on, which would be eight or more moths per trap per day. Once that happens, you can use degree days, and we have a calculator for that at go.illinois.edu/degree days. But you can use temperature accumulation to predict when those larvae become large enough to cut the plants. And around that time, it's not exact, you know, it'll get you within a few days of that cutting time, you can go out and, one, look for plants that have been cut off at the base. And then when you find that, you dig through the top layer of the soil, you look in the whorls of surrounding plants, and see if you're able to find any of those black cutworm larvae, which will be a dark gray coloration and have almost a greasy, like a sheen type appearance to them.
And finally, what control measures are available?
Now, in terms of control, foliar insecticides, especially some of the pyrethroids and organophosphates we often use, are pretty effective if a rescue treatment is needed, and you'll want to consider an application like that if you have somewhere between 1 and 3% of your plants cut by black cutworm. In addition, several of the BT trait packages, including those that include Cry1F or VIP3A as above ground proteins, are somewhat effective for preventing black cutworm damage.
Thanks, Nick. Nick Sider is an Extension Field Crops entomologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's stay with the subject of corn, but we'll go back about a month, well, not quite that far, to the mid part of April, when I had a discussion with Gary Schnitke about whether on open acres, if farmers should plant corn or soybeans this season. It relates to an article he had posted to the Farm Doc Daily website. I asked him, given now the average planting date time frame that we're in, if farmers needed to reconsider anything, and he said no, that you should probably just use that same story again because it runs through June the 10th and leans towards planting corn rather than soybeans, and the numbers are still kind of the same, even for the fall delivery months. So let's start with Gary. I asked him why he decided to take a look at this.
Yeah, usually as you're going through the growing season or planting season, you know, you get into late March, early June, it's usually more profitable to plant soybeans and corn in that later part of the growing season. We are not finding it this year. We're finding that corn is more profitable than soybeans throughout the growing, throughout the planting season. And, you know, honestly, the differences are pretty wide, particularly like in April right now, it's $200 per acre. And as we get into June, it goes down to $100 per acre. So corn is projected more profitable than soybeans.
You do make note in the Farm Doc Daily article that profits for either crop don't really fall off until planting dates get later in the month of May.
So if you look at what yield functions look like, it's well into May before we see a lot of yield declines, and then that's what will cause lower profits. But if we get in the fields in late April or early May, that's still a pretty optimal time to be planting corn and soybeans, and still a very good possibility of having a good crop.
One of the reasons you took up this discussion, I take it, was because the prospective plantings report showed a very low corn acreage across the United States.
We saw a shift of corn from corn to soybeans in the acreage report. A lot of that came out not in Illinois, but even in Illinois, we saw corn go down 300,000 acres, or projected to go down from 2001 to this year. You know, that was occurring even as we were, throughout the growing season, projecting more profits for corn. Usually when that happens, farmers plant more corn. But this year, that did not happen. And I suspect it has a lot to do with input uncertainty, and particularly nitrogen fertilizer uncertainty.
Beyond the production-related limiting issues, what other things should producers consider if they're thinking about moving soybean acres to corn?
Obviously, the first thing we want to do is make sure we do have the inputs and can get those priced. And that will be a major concern this year. Also, when they're doing that, you know, we're doing that late in the year, and make sure that we get proper hybrids, and also that we might have to increase cost a bit, particularly if we're going on corn after corn ground, because, you know, we probably have to do more tillage than usual if we're switching acres that will be more corn after corn.
What prices and budgets did you use for the article?
So in this article, we used $7 corn price and $14.80 soybean price, which is, it's hard to believe, but it is the harvest time bid for those two crops right now. We were using prices for fertilizer as of early this month. So we used 33% at $621 per ton, $987 for DAP, and potash at $865 per ton. So all of those prices are very high. And all our costs, we used what were projected in the recent update of the 2022 budgets. And all of those are up considerably. So very high cost across the board.
That was a conversation I held with Gary Schnicki, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, in mid-April, related to an article he had posted to the Farm Doc Daily website entitled Corn More Profitable Than Soybean Through June the 10th. I asked him this morning if it would be worth running again. His answer on email was, sure. So I did. Let's check in with Mike Tenura now from T-Storm Weather. He is at tstorm.net. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today. We have a lot of ground to cover. Speaking of which, a lot of ground is awfully wet in the Corn Belt, and there's a big storm making its way through parts of the Midwest now. Can you tell me about it?
Well, that system is the last of a series of systems that have affected the central U.S. in recent weeks. It will move through over the next 24 hours, and then it will end. And once the rains end, it turns a lot drier and a lot milder across the central U.S. In fact, temperatures are going to reach the mid-70s to mid-90s, starting as early as next week and then lasting for 1 week. So this is a big pattern change that's happening. It's all going to take place because a big system will develop off to the west, and that will produce southerly winds across the central United States, and that will pump mild air to the north for an extended period of time. So for Illinois in particular, temperatures will easily get into the 80s for much of next week, and this will limit coolness from being a limiting factor for planting. It also will be a lot drier, as we mentioned, and there's not very good rain chances out there until maybe 10 days out once we get through tomorrow. The only thing we need to keep in mind for corn planting is that in the Dakotas, it's going to stay pretty wet. North Dakota had its wettest April in more than 128 years, and there is a lot more rain on the way next week. So that's going to make it challenging to plant corn in the Dakotas as well as spring wheat. And that will be something to monitor going forward. And essentially, we'll have this demarcation between fairly wet conditions that linger and then improving conditions elsewhere a week from now.
Let's stay in the Northern Hemisphere, but we'll switch to Europe. Ukraine and Russia. Issues there, of course, but I'm wondering what the growing conditions have looked like for both of those nations in the primary regions for wheat, corn, and soybean.
Well, rain has not been a problem over the last several months and even dating to last fall. So conditions are pretty moist. The thing that's been happening lately is that it's been very cool, and that's going to continue. Temperatures will stay much below normal over the next 10 to 14 days. And because of that, it's a limiting factor for corn and sunflower planting. Ideally, we'd have dry and mild weather at this time of the year, but we're looking at cool weather, but not very much rain. So not a totally negative situation, but not an ideal one for rapid planting. As we move further to the west, a different pattern is developing across France and Germany, where it's going to turn much, much warmer. This is kind of similar to what's happening in the U.S., where the western U.S. is going to be pretty cool next week, while the central and eastern U.S. is very mild. Well, in Europe, those western areas of France, Germany, and the United Kingdom are going to turn unusually warm, while the eastern areas of Europe and then into Ukraine and Russia stay very cool. And that's something we're going to have to monitor, because if you look at how much rain's fallen over the last several months, it's actually been pretty dry in France and Germany and the United Kingdom. They could use more rain than they've had lately, and the pattern coming up is not conducive to a lot of rain. So rapeseed and winter wheat will be a little bit drier and warmer than normal going forward in Western Europe. But that is a pretty good situation for corn and sunflower planting, with France being the number one producer of both in the EU. So, Tom, just kind of a mixed bag here. We're still in this waiting game, as we often are in the month of May, where we have things developing, but nothing too concrete. And it just will take a little more time to see what this all means once we get into June.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, great being here.
We'll talk with you again next week. That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.